Do a little mic check here. Is that does that sound all right for you? How about everyone else? Can you hear me all right? Never had any problems with modulation, I guess. My name's Mark Houston. I'm an alcoholic. And a power that I didn't believe in, didn't have much time for, separated me from alcohol and cocaine the morning of October the 19th of 1982. And if I believe my big book, and I do, that power, along with a daily course of action, working with the strict spiritual disciplines of the 10th and 11th and 12th step, have kept me from drinking. I always got to stay clear on what I'm supposed to do versus what God's supposed to do. Because I did the great God cop-out. God keeps me sober. Well, there's this idea there's nothing but God, so of course that's a part of it. But if you really read the 10th and 11th step, it says that you and I are sitting here sober because we're in fit spiritual condition, correct? And then there's about 5 or 6 pages of what we're supposed to do, of very intense, very specific stuff. Prayers to say. Supposed to set aside some time in the morning, meditate. Supposed to consider your plans for the day. Supposed to ask for freedom from self. All kinds of things. And then there's a lot of tools that you're supposed to work with all through the day as you rub up against yourself. I'll talk more about this, but the 10th step is what I do once my hand is on the door and I'm coming out and interact with you. You do the 11th step in your home in the morning and in your home in the evening. But the 10th step you use when the game is on. And by the way, when you find yourself in the middle of a highway and there's an 18-wheeler bearing down on you, that is not a good time to try and figure out how you got there. The 10th step is about move. Get the force away from yourself. Things like watch, ask, pause, turn. Turn out of yourself into, cease fighting. Practices. 10th step is an abyss, 2 pages. 5-6 paragraphs long. We never talk about the last 2 or 3 paragraphs of the 10th step. There are a set of practices when I go out my door that I get to work with all day long. And I'll talk more about that. First 9 steps allowed me to open a door into what the big book says is I've entered the world of the spirit. What does that mean? What a great question. Well, what does that mean? 10th step, I've entered the world of the spirit. My experience is it means I've entered the world of the spirit. See, the big book does stuff like this is... It's a real tricky book, like you'll sit in meetings and somebody will say, I don't know how it works. I do. There's a whole chapter, how it works. Well, I don't know how to sponsor someone. Well, there's a whole chapter called Into Action, Working with Others. Right? And we go, well, I don't know how it works. I do. Big book gave me a set of precise, specific, clear-cut instructions on how to recover from a hopeless condition of body and mind. And it's very clear about how that process develops. So I want to read a couple quotes from one of my meditation books. This is called 365 Tao, a book of daily meditations. And first one is called Practice. It says, spiritual success is gained by daily cultivation. If you practice for the day, you have won. If you were lazy for the day, then you have lost. Self-cultivation is the heart of spiritual attainment. Gaining insight and ability is not a matter of grand statements, dramatic initiations, or sporadic moments of enlightenment. Those things are only highlights in a life of consistent activity. Whatever system of spirituality you practice, do it every day. If it's prayer, then pray every day. If it's meditation, then meditate every day. If it's exercise, then exercise every day. Only then will you be able to say that you are truly practicing spirituality. This methodical approach is reassuring in several ways. First, it provides you with a process and a means to maintain progress, even if that particular day is not inspiring or significant. Just to practice is already good. Second, it gives you a certain faith. If you practice every day, it is inevitable that you will gain from it. Thirdly, constant practice gives you a certain satisfaction. How can you say to yourself you have truly entered a spiritual path unless you can look back on years of daily practice and take comfort in the momentum that it has given you? And of course, our big book, when it talks to me about the 10th, 11th step, reinforces that idea. And I told some of you last night that I planned on doing what it asked me to do in the chapter Working with Others. I was hoping to disturb some of you about the question of alcoholism. And I ask you to look at some things. I ask you to what you were doing with the disciplines of the 10th and 11th step. This idea of the things I need to do to stay in fit spiritual condition. I challenge you with the idea that my body can't live off the food I ate 2 weeks ago, and if you're trying to stay sober off an old experience, that won't work. You may find yourself in a very unexpected place called a bar or at some doctor's office getting Vicodin. Why? Because you're not in fit spiritual condition. Why? Because you're not doing the very thing that got you to where you're at. So I challenge some of you, take a look. Do you have a daily prayer and meditation life? Then I posed another question to you, because the actions I take or don't take are always based on what? My belief systems. So if you're not working with the disciplines of 10 and 11, if you've gotten away from doing evening review, if you don't have a prayer and meditation life, both, what's the belief system behind that? Pardon me? Well, yeah, playing God. I don't need to do that to stay sober. Really? First step. One third of the big book is devoted to looking at your first step experience. And there's three words. Again, these are words we don't talk about in our meetings that are very, very important around this idea of the mental obsession. First 33 pages, doctor's opinion, up to page 23, are designed to look at one thing. When I take a drink, do I lose power, choice, and control over how much? That's not a rocket scientist question. You just have to go into your experience. If your drug of no choice is something, another alcohol, such as cocaine or pills or whatever, you're going to ask yourself the same question. If I snort that line of cocaine, do I have power, choice, control over how much? And you only can answer that experientially. And if the answer is no, then you're powerless once it's in your body, correct? Not hard to work with. Pages 23 to 43 talk about what we talk about in the rooms about this idea of I have a mental obsession. Here's another way to look at that. Is I will commit the most insane act of my life stone cold sober. What do I mean by that? See, I could trick you. I could ask you all to give me a list of the 10 most insane things you've ever done, and I promise you that everything you write in the list would be under the influence of alcohol or drugs. Am I right? Well, if you're like me, if when you take a drink or if when you do drugs, you lose power, choice, control over how much, then once you're separated from alcohol and drugs, the most insane thing that you could ever do, and you're going to do it stone cold sober, is your mind's going to tell you to drink or do dope again, and you're going to act on that. How do you help somebody who commits the most insane act of their life stone cold sober? I work with chronic relapsers all the time, and one of my first questions is, do you think you're involved with your relapse? You know what they always tell me? Oh, yeah. Really? If I was involved with my relapse, you would have another speaker. That means I have the power to choose whether I drink or not drink. I don't. The drink chooses me, regardless of circumstance, consequence, whatever. Right? But in those pages 23 to 43, there's these three little words, they stick in there. At certain times. Mark will have no effective mental defense against the first drink at certain times. That doesn't mean every time, does it? How about the day that you choose to not do the disciplines of 10 or 11? What if it's that day? See, if you're not, as far as I can tell, if you believe this book, if you've had the experience I had and you believe this book, and the only reason you're staying sober is fit spiritual condition, then if you're not working with the disciplines of 10 or 11, then you have a belief system. You know what the day looks like when your mind's going to take you back to a drink. Would you agree with that? See? This program, for me, one of the things I finally had to get very clear on, it's about a lot more than God. There's a lot of action in here. Lots of action. My experience is I've got to set the alarm clock to get up in the morning. Right? There's this whole thing of what's the most important relationship in your life, right? And people lie to me and say, God. And I go, really? How much time did you give God this morning? Ooh, about 5 minutes. See? Am I willing to get up early to set aside time, get a little uncomfortable? Got a new mantra I'm working with this year. I'm here to build character instead of seek comfort. Sought comfort a lot of my life. Am I willing to build character? I get up between 4 and 4:15, Monday through Friday. Why? Because my life schedule is such I need to get up then to have an hour with this power, with this God, in prayer and meditation, doing what the big book says. Because here's what I have seen over time. The men and women who were my teachers and mentors and who worked out of the big book all die sober. What I've noticed about them is they're doing this stuff right up to the day they die. And I mean all of it. They're not just drinking, going to meetings, living off an old experience. They're doing the deal. They're writing current inventory. They're working with prayer. They're working with meditation. They're doing written evening review. See? Wow. But at certain times, I'll have no effective mental defense against the first drink. If I live my life as though I know that, do I even know what it means to be in fit spiritual condition? That's another great question, isn't it? Right? First step, illness of the body and mind. No human power. Once more, the alcoholic, the drug addict, at certain times, has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Is that your experience? It was my experience. My first step experience, the first half of the first step, turned me into a seeker of power and ended the great debate. If you're like me, if every form of human aid did not work to keep you away from a drink, and if your experience is you'll commit the most insane act of your life sober, you better find some power. I tell people I'm Norwegian and alky, but I'm not an idiot. My experience showed me I needed a relationship with a power greater than myself, and quite frankly, I didn't care what you called it. I tell people this. You have a first-step experience. You're willing to get dip-dunk, sprayed, and neutered to find God. You understand that? Steps 2 through 12 are not about 2 through 12, ladies and gentlemen. They're about your need for power. If you need power, 2 through 12 is like kissing a baby's butt compared to what whiskey does. Look what whiskey asks of you. You break the hearts of every human being who ever means anything to you. If you're a parent, you're a lousy one. When you take the drink, or if you're dying of untreated alcoholism, you're a miserable employee. The list goes on and on and on and on. And then you come in the rooms, and we say, well, if you want what we have, you're going to have to do a few things. Go through the book, work the steps. You're going to have to write inventory, 3 of them. That's really the first time the book does something to move you into a form of action other than look at some considerations, right? But you're going to read these inventories, and you're going to make a list of defects. You're going to take those to God. Then you've got to make a list of all the people you've harmed. Got to pay all the money back. I was going over this one time with a guy. He looks at me, he goes, God, Mark, I just want to not drink, right? And then you got to work with the disciplines of 10, 11, and then you got to work with others. Now, think of what booze does to you. It does to you the same thing to me. we hear what we got to do when we come in the rooms and go,
well, that sounds like a bit much.
Really? See, how do you help somebody like that? See, a big book says, die an alcoholic death or live on a spiritual basis. And the guy looks at you and he goes, could you tell me what dying alcoholic death looks like? Right? I tell this to the guys at my recovery center all the time. Alcoholics are the only people in the world that will come to you asking for help, and you'll give them some idea what they got to do, and they'll kick you in the nuts in appreciation because they don't like what you said. Then we wonder why we're so hard to help, right? First step. That's why I go back and revisit my first step every year. My first step is what keeps me in the rooms. My first step is what keeps me writing inventory. My first step is what's keeping me working with the disciplines of 10 and 11. My first step is what keeps me sponsoring men, these whiners and moaners. You know, I always got one or two new, needy, clingy. You know. See, who's going to do that unless you need to do that to live? To live. See? I go around the country a lot of groups, they sell chips, right? You guys have chips? You start looking around, the number of chips picked up from 10 years on up. You start looking at 20, you start looking at 30, and it's non-existent. Where do you think these people go? You think they just go to church? I don't think so. My truth is very few people ever get sober and die sober. You lose that first step connection, your connection with what is wrong with you, right? And over time, it's a subtle thing. You start just going to a little less meetings. You used to sponsor a bunch of guys. Now you're sponsored one. It's very subtle. And then you're not calling your sponsors much. Then you wake up one day and you're out. Now you're up against yourself and you can't get back in again. I tell the guys I work with, this AA is not for sprinters. It's for marathon runners. I know all kinds of sprinters. You know, they 6 months on fire, boom. I'll say, yeah, well, just keep coming back, right? It's for marathon runners, one day at a time. There's no quick fixes. See, am I willing to do that? Am I willing to do that process? I want to read one more reading, and then I'm going to move into the fourth step. I don't know if there any of you in here struggling on the God issue. Any of you struggling with the God issue, raise your hands. One person, two people. The rest of you are liars. How do you not struggle in the God? We're talking about God. You know, give me a break. We all got God issues. It's called Donkey. One of my favorite readings. Says, dismount your donkey at the summit. Some places in this world are very hard to climb, and people will use animals. Each person can only ride one, and each animal might have a different name. The riders go up the trail in different orders, and they will discuss their varying opinions about their experiences. They may even have conflicting opinions. One traveler may think the trip thrilling, another may find it terrifying, and a third may find it boring. At the summit, all the travelers stand in the same place. Each of them has the same chance to view the same vista. The donkeys are put to rest and they graze. They are not needed anymore. We all travel the path to God. The donkeys are the various doctrines that each of us embraces. What does it matter which doctrine we embrace as long as it leads us to the summit? Your donkey might be a Zen donkey. Mine might be a Tao donkey. There's the AA donkey, the CA donkey, the Back to Basics donkey, the Big Book Thumper donkey. There's Christian, Islamic, Jewish, and even agnostic donkeys. All donkeys lead to the same place. Why poke fun at others over the name of their donkey? Aren't you riding one yourself? We should put aside both the donkeys and our interim experiences once we arise at the summit. Whether we climbed in suffering or joy is immaterial, we are there. All religions have different names for the ways of getting to the holy summit. Once we reach the summit, we no longer need names, and we experience all things directly. Boy, that says a lot, doesn't it? So I'm going to talk about the AA donkey. It was the AA donkey that got me to the summit. And once you get to the summit, it doesn't matter how people, what donkey gets them up there. And really, even within the rooms of AA. I've always loved that visualization, though. Particularly when I watch people when they start debating this God issue, right? And I've just often thought about that of, you got a Christian donkey, and you got a Buddhist donkey, and a Zen donkey, and an agnostic donkey, and an AA. And we're going up, and there's this incredible view, and all we're doing is arguing about, well, the spots in my donkey are much nicer than the spots on yours. No, they're not, right? We missed the whole view. I only have one question for anybody about your donkey. Is it getting you to the summit? If not, you might want to trade the son of a bitch in. Find one that gets you there. Get a donkey that gets you to the summit you can dismount. And then the view is the same for everybody. I found my donkey right here, right in the pages of this book. Particularly 30 pages of action that I had to take, starting with the fourth step, up to the ninth step, and then a set of disciplines on a daily basis. And it took me to the summit. And I had a revolutionary spiritual experience. And I am a recovered alcoholic and cocaine addict. I am not recovering. I have recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body, exactly as my big book promised to me I would, starting on the title page. The story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered. I claim that. Get a Concordia. See how many times the big book used the word recovering. That false humility, I always be recovering. That is inconsistent with the book. You don't have to believe me. Read your book. Right? By the way, only disclaimer I ever give, if I say anything that you cannot reconcile with the big book, I'm wrong. But do not let anybody read your big book for you. It's full of promises starting on the very opening page of that book, all the way through to the end. It says, we have recovered and been given the power to help others. I'm not making that up. Right? We talked about some of the other incredible promises. There's promises in every step. There's third step promises, the fifth step promises. There's some of the most powerful ones in the whole book. The ninth step promise. See, I don't know about you, but you know, if you're new, there's a couple people that are new sitting in here tonight. Is there any promise I can hook onto prior to the ninth step? Yeah, all kinds of them. All kinds. Starting on the title page. You can recover from a hopeless state of mind and body in the forward, the first edition. All kinds of promises. What a wonderful thing. 10-step promises. We don't talk about those. Y'all know what those are, don't you? Things like we've ceased fighting, anything or any bud. Wow. Things like we've been placed in a position of neutrality. We are safe and protected. Wow. Things like you have a new sixth sense. Those are all 10-step promises. We don't talk about those. You want to have fun sometime? I don't know about you, but when alcohol worked, all the 9-step promises behind alcohol worked too. Take the 9-step promises when alcohol worked and read them. Now try and read the 10-step promises when alcohol was working. You can't do it. It's very interesting. 10-step, though, I enter the world of the Spirit. I, in particular, tonight want to move into, we went up through the third step last night, and I want to talk about the fourth step. I'm big on inventory, writing inventory, pen and paper. A lot more happens between pen and paper than mind and mouth. I'll say that again. A lot more happens between pen and paper than mind and mouth. I watch particularly people get time. Craig, we went through this recently. He was in a situation, he called me. And there was the ex-husband was making the call. My pal Craig was non-existent. The reason I knew that wasn't even high. It's just, I got to talk. You hold phone out to here. He didn't draw a breath for like 5 minutes. So he gets done, and I said, Will, I hope you're sitting alongside the freeway instead of driving. No, I'm driving. When you get back to Austin, I want you to take a pen to paper, and I want you to write some inventory, and I'm not going to talk about this again until you do. He called me two more times trying to get me to talk about it. Because that's an easier, soft way. Somehow I'll talk about it. I'll make it go away. It doesn't go away. It just simmers. Then something else happens. Boom, comes up again. Four-step is not about recreating yourself in your own image. Four-step is about facing, be rid of that which has you blocked from power. The four-step is where you get entirely rid of self. That's why it's such a powerful tool. Take pen to paper. So we talked last night about the third step, and I want to reiterate where the book really starts telling me what's wrong with me. And I've always thought they were very cruel when they introduced this to me, because it really starts to take place on page 62 of the book, right? And then you have the 10 pages in the doc's opinion. Now, that's 72 pages of information before they finally start telling you and I what's wrong with us, and the word alcohol or drugs is not in there. Now, that's cruel. That's not right. Why couldn't they have done that in the beginning? See, I thought when I came in the rooms and it said Alcoholics Anonymous, this was about me not drinking alcohol, because I thought my problem was alcohol. 72 pages in the book, they say, no, selfishness, self-centeredness is the root of your troubles. See, I thought it was vodka, Jack Daniels, cocaine, right? And then it describes how you and I live our life when we're selfish and self-centered. We go through life being driven. If you have not looked that word, look the word driven up. And you will find the word driven implies you have no choice. Here's how it looks for me when I'm into self-will. Limo pulls up in front of my house. I go out and get in. The driver turns around. He says, hi, Mark. My name's Fear, and I'm going to drive your ass today. And he does all day long. The next day it's self-delusion. The next day it's self-seeking. The next day it's self-pity. But I'm being driven. Why? Because I'm into self-will. I'm into me. Choice. Choice has nothing to do with it when you're being driven. By the way, there's nothing worse than sitting in the rooms of AA sober for a while, thinking you're choosing the course of action that you take on a daily basis. I'll tell you what woke me up to the fact that maybe I wasn't choosing, maybe I was being driven, is I looked at courses of action I began to take in sobriety that were not in my highest good. And it occurred to me, I'm too intelligent to choose that course of action, that maybe I better start looking at the idea I was being driven with no choice. Right? So that's something for you to think about. So driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. Now I want you to think about inventory as I cover this with you. Let me ask this question. How many of you have written inventory, say, in the last 4 months? Okay. So, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pitying, I step on the toes of my fellows. Column 1 of your inventory, resentment inventory. They retaliate. Column 2, why you're angry. Sometimes they hurt me. Third column, how do it affect you? See me without provocation. I didn't do anything. But it says we invariably find. Invariably means every time. We invariably find at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, third column, which later placed me in a position to be hurt. If that is true, every single time I've ever written inventory, I should be able to go back and see that at some point in time, I made decisions based on self, which placed me in a position to be hurt. Now, sometimes that means going back 10 to 15 to 20 years. But my experience is this is true. And then the book goes on and talks about, so my troubles are of my own making. Your fourth column. Think about this. It's Groundhog Day stuff. If you're in self-will, you're going to go through life being driven by what? 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. You get up in the morning, the voices are talking. Let's go. Got to go to work. Got to sell. Got to do boom, boom, boom. Whatever. Got to arrange all these people to fit you. You know, got to. So you begin this course of action. Your course of action conflicts with theirs, and some of them get upset with you. And they do what the book says. They retaliate. And then your feelings are hurt. Then you bring that crap into my meeting instead of write inventory on it. No. But that's what happens. And that happens long enough, and then you and I start to get diseased. And then one day the voice says, at certain time, Mark, I know what would treat that. Is a drink or a drug or a line. And if I'm not in fit spiritual condition, I'll act on that. Commit the most insane act of my life, sober. So all my troubles are of my own making. And it goes on to say, my troubles arise out of me, and I am an extreme example of self-run riot, though I do not think so. Now the book gets a little more serious about our dilemma. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of the selfishness we muster. It kills us. See, if you're not working, this is my experience. If you're not working with the daily disciplines of 10 or 11, your selfishness is growing and growing and growing. You cannot defeat your ego. See, I don't care how long you're sober. You cannot defeat your ego. It will take the best of us. That's the whole purpose of the disciplines of 10 or 11, is to wake yourself up to your selfishness. All that happens when you get sober over a longer period of time, your stage characters change. That's all that happens. They get nicer and kinder, more spiritual and more evolved. But it's still all tricks of the ego. That's all. They just change. They're craftier. Get kinder, right? But you can't defeat the ego, you see? So it's interesting. We must get rid of the selfish. We muster. It kills us. And, of course, God's name is in the next sentence, and our name is not. My self-will cannot eliminate my self-will, which is why all the self-help books in the world don't help people like us. I'm okay, you're okay, and the cat's okay. Doesn't work. What works for me is I'm an ass, you're an ass, and I'm okay with that. See? That kind of stuff doesn't work for me. I've tried it. I have. I really have. I've tried to self-will myself into being a nice person. It doesn't work. It goes against my very nature, right? The big book earlier talked about that. It talks about even when Mark's motives are kind, he is selfish and self-centered. Watch out! Right? That's why I told you the other night, now nice Elkies scare me because I know better. Thank God we were given the AA donkey. It allows us to function in the world. See, they give us our own tribe. We got to meet, see, only with each other. And other people don't understand us. Now it goes on, it says, there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without God's aid. I told you this last night. That sentence tells me that if I'm willing to continue to do some things in this book, I can be entirely rid of self. Now, I don't know about the rest of you, but on any given day, I get real tired of Mark. You know what I'm saying? See? Can you imagine that? Entirely rid of self. See, Craig came up to me one day, and he says, I want to become enlightened. And I said, well, I'm sorry to hear that. And he said, why? I said, because the part of you that wants to get enlightened, if it happens, you will not be around to recognize it. He said, well, I don't want to be enlightened if I can't recognize it. Right? I can be entirely rid of self with God's aid. How does that happen? The steps. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Make amends. Discipline 10, 11. Do it again. Do it again. Do it again. Entirely rid of self. Amazing. Amazing process. And then it goes on and talks about, you and I have this moral and philosophical convictions galore. You know, I'm going to be a neat guy, pay taxes, honor my relationships, be a man of integrity. I'm going to work out 6 days a week, get buff, you know, quit all bad vices, eat nothing but nutritious food. How's that working for you? Not good. See, you know, going to buy 14 books as I'm trying to do all this. And then I turn around and give him the next alky who's going to try that. It's because they don't work for me. And, you know, so I see that this is me. I can't live up to him even though I would like to. Neither can I reduce my self-centeredness by wishing or trying on my own power. See, here's where I'm up against when I look at this second and third step and move into the fourth. My own power versus do I need God's power? That's where the rub is. I had to have God's help. Do I? Yeah. Yeah. So then the book said, this is how you're going to get God's help. Earlier on, the book told you and I where we're going to find God, deep down within. Matter of fact, it says in the final analysis, that's the only place that we'll find God. Tell the men that I work with that this is a neat deal. The very power I need dwells within me, but I'm blocked from it. Call it a jewel, call it whatever, but it exists within and I'm blocked. 4 through 9 will remove that. And the very power that I need to change and transform my life, I don't have to go anywhere. I can find it in Cabo, Austin, Texas, anywhere. What a wonderful, incredible thing if I'm willing to just take a course of action. See, I don't know about the rest of you, but that was like a Cheech and Chong moment. I had this idea somehow I had to go somewhere to experience God and that God was out there. The idea that I'm going to have this experience internally was a whole new concept for me, right? So here's how I'm going to get God's help. I got to quit playing God. I gave some of you an assignment if you wanted to try it last night. Make a list of your areas currently in your life in which you like to play God. Any of you do that, by the way? Seriously, that's a great exercise. Did you do that? Good. In your head? It's kind of funny, isn't it? Seriously. See, the reason I wanted to throw this out to you, I don't think you're much different than me. I think most of you have a whole bunch of areas you want to play God in. You've just been sober long enough to pretend you ain't got that going on. See? That makes sense? You understand what I just said to you? Remember, you get craftier. See, the toolkit of self-will, the longer you're sober, it's just craftier, that's all. You'll use kindness. Let me get that for you. Still a toolkit of self-will. But it talks about the reason you and I are going to quit playing God is because it, me playing God, doesn't work. Do I believe that? Do I believe that? Yeah. Yes. Every time I go back and look at this, where am I playing God? And do I believe that me playing God doesn't work? Yes. Why is that important? Because somewhere in here, there must be a collapse of the self. A collapse to the point to understand that you're part of a greater whole and you don't have a clue about any of it. How long people are supposed to be here, how long they're supposed to live, you name it, where you live, all of it. It's that kind of a collapse. You understand? That kind of a collapse. Where you become a part of a plan. See? You're going to quit playing God. What does that mean for me? It means where I live, who's in my life, who's not, Where what I do for a living, all of it. All of it is in the hands of someone else. The only thing I worry about is what's within my control. What do I mean by that? This morning, what time I got up, setting the alarm clock, doing the disciplines of the 10th and 11th step this morning. If I wanted to work out today, I could do that. If I wanted to eat right today, I could do that. All kinds. That's what's within my domain. The rest of it is not. It just isn't. I'm along for the ride. See, I kind of like living in Denver, Colorado. If I had seen it, I'd never got to Texas. I've been in Texas since 1991. My resistance, the way I wound up there, was I wound up going there through a nut house. Don't resist this thing. God wants you in Texas, you're going to Texas. See, I didn't know for the longest time why the book warns you and I when we make this third step decision. See, people rub up against this third step and they say this third step prayer in which you say to God, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and you do with me as thou wilt. I'm going to go back to my episode in Texas. I had 3 job offers to come to Texas the 2 years prior to going to the psych hospital. I turned them all down. Why? Because I didn't want to go to Texas. God said, look, got work for you down here, boy. We're going to try it this way. You're going to get a nice job offer. They're willing to move you down. All kinds of stuff. No, thank you. I like it here. Okay, we're going to try it again. Right? We try another offer. Nah, I got it. I got it. Okay, cool. You gave your life to me. It's a good thing you did. You weren't doing too well. I got work for you in Texas. Now we're going to do it my way. You're going to be really depressed to the point where you can't work. And you can't leave your apartment. And you're going to get really uncomfortable. I'm going to leave you in the desert for a while. You want to stay in Denver? You go right ahead. Have a good day. And I wrote out the desert experience. Then through a series of events, I wound up in Texas. Got some water back in my diet again. I said, When I got released from that place, I made an agreement. God, I'm going to try and pay a little bit more attention next time when you want me going somewhere. Matter of fact, I'm just going to travel light for a while. See? That's exactly what happened. I was in Houston, Texas for a while, and then Kerrville, Texas, and then Austin, Texas, then Dallas, Texas. Now I'm back in Austin. Now I will tell you this, and all the time I've been sober, I feel like I can sink roots. First time. I know what it's like to get sent out. See, we say this third step prayer, and then we forget what we said, because we think they're just words. They're just little words, right? See, some of you, I know some of you are going through some suffering. I want you to understand what you said to that which created everything. I offer myself to thee, to build with me, and you do with me as you want. And then that power does that, and you whine. Doesn't work that way. See? See, somewhere in there, what I had to learn along the way was I had to have faith and courage. And I had to look at myself like a child, a little 2-3-year-old child. You know, I have a tendency to play with sharp knives, right? Parent takes it away. What's the child do? Child gets upset. Parents taking it away for the child's own benefit, right? See, that's what I've had to look at in terms of me and this relationship with God. And that's just the way I am. I whine a lot when the knife, the shiny object, gets taken away from me. You stay sober long enough, you start to understand why that happens. So, we say the third step prayer. And then off of that prayer, now we're going to launch into inventory. And I want to talk about resentment inventory. They use some great words. Personal house cleaning. Though my third step decision was a vital and crucial step, it, by the way, my experience is when you go through the big book and the book uses the word it, always know what it means. Because it does that a lot. But know what it means. Though my third step decision was vital and crucial, it will have little permanent effect. What do you think they meant there? You don't think they meant permanent effect, do you? Yeah, they meant permanent effect. A permanent effect. I've never drank since the time I did this. I have experienced a permanent effect. Why? Because I was willing to do the rest of the work. Relapse is not complex. It is not. There's a set of precise, specific, clear-cut instructions, and the book says if you're willing to do them, you cannot fail. The only people I've seen that could not maintain permanent sobriety were the ones who would not submit to this process. I don't know if there's such a thing as reincarnation. If there is, I must not have been a nice guy in the last lifetime. And the reason I say that is I normally only get to sponsor chronic relapsers. Their 4 favorite words are I know and yes, but. They know more about the big book than I ever thought of. And they like to point that out to me. but they can't stay sober. Finally, they come to me, and it's not complex, and it's not because of the stuff that happened to them as a child. It's because they've never been willing to surrender one day at a time and go through this process and gain access to power and then keep doing that. Most of them don't want to work with other people. They're too selfish. But I don't find relapse to be any big secret whatsoever. So let's go on and look at some of our instructions around the four step. Here's what this is. This is going to be a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things inside me which have been blocking me from what? Power. The power I need. That's the only reason I write inventory, ladies and gentlemen. There is no other reason. I need access to power, and I'm blocked from it. Here's where the book starts to tell you and I that my liquor or my drugs is but a symptom. When you go to a doctor, what does the doctor do? He asks you a series of questions if you're not feeling well, correct? What do you report to him? Symptoms. Does he treat the symptoms or the problem? He treats the problem. Your drinking and or your drug use is not the problem. It is a symptom. Do you get that? Earlier, the book told us what the problem was. You remember what that was? It said, above everything, we must be rid of what? That's the problem, selfishness. That's the problem. If, for whatever reason, you'll have to complain to God about this because I don't understand it either. When I get consumed with myself, I like to drink. I don't know why, I just do, and so do you. Or you don't drink, but you get real miserable. When you think everything's about you, the spotlight's always got to be on you. It's got to work out the way you want. Don't know why that is. I don't know why we're that way, but we are. That's why the book says at this point, Mark, your booze is but a symptom. We got to get down to causes, second column, and conditions, third column. If you haven't taken a dictionary, look up the word causes and conditions. Condition refers to a state of being. Remember last night, I gave you all something to look at too. Identify your list of characters, your stage characters, all the different things that you think define who and what you are. Every one of those is a state of being. Look up the word condition. It refers to a state of being. Big book, when it goes from the third column to fourth column, says, in that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancy real, has the power to kill. So you'll come back to this. When I really began to work a lot with inventory, I truly became a student, and I started looking these words up, and I started seeing, because I was watching these incredible things happen off of writing inventory and doing fifth steps, and I could not understand why. How can you write these three inventories, sit across from somebody, do a fifth step, and then get catapulted into the fifth step promises? Not to mention amends. How does that happen? That makes no sense whatsoever. So I started to really explore that, say, what takes place here? I knew somehow it was connected to entirely being rid of self. And that's what happens, ladies and gentlemen, 4 through 9. As you begin to get disconnected from all these mind-made false sense of self that you think defined you, that makes you afraid all the time, you begin to get pulled back from that. You begin to be rid of that which has you blocked from what? God, the power deep down within. And you begin to feel that connection, that sense of oneness. And you begin to know that all is well in spite of what's going on out here. And you begin to touch that part of you, true self, call it what you will, awakened spirit, whatever. But that's why, to me, I begin to pay so much attention to the fourth step and the fifth step. It's also why I begin to do what I call multiple fifth steps, where you take a body of work and read it to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different people. Fabulous experience. If you haven't tried it, try it. Big book said I need to take my inventory and read it to person or persons, plural. By the way, one thing I'll throw out here. If you've never taken a body of inventory and read it to several people, then you have no experience with it, right? All you have is an opinion. I'm not interested in your opinion of an experience you've never had. That was one of my major defects for years. I would give you my opinion on all kinds of experiences I'd never had. Finally, I said to myself, self, that needs to go away. So in 1995, I was approached with the idea of doing multiple fifth steps. So I did. I went to California and did one in Kerrville, Texas, went down to Louisiana, read one to a woman long time sober, did three fifth steps within 1 month, sat with that, three of them. It was an incredible experience. Had no reservation about amends whatsoever. Saw tremendous levels of truth through the three fifth steps. I've been doing multiple fifth steps ever since. Now, when I had an opinion and no experience, I didn't do them. I'll tell you what I realized in hindsight is my ego was scared to death that it was going to get broken down. Right? Let me see if I can explain what I mean by that for just a moment. You know, a lot of times you go in meetings, they'll have meetings on forgiveness. Ever been to a meeting on forgiveness? This is my experience. I don't have to operate with the concept of forgiveness. Here's why. If I'll do inventory work, the part of me that would need to forgive dies, and there's nothing to forgive. See, the ego, to the ego self, all I do is enhance the memory if I'm working on trying to forgive you. It gets worse for me. It doesn't get better. What has to happen is the part of me that would need to forgive better die. And the only way I know how to do that is steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. So, let's talk about it. You're going to make a list of people, institutions, or principles with whom you're mad. Whenever I write inventory, I write down. Why? Because of the instructions. They gave us, make a list, and they put a period. They didn't say right across. So I stop, I say a prayer, and the names flow. People, institutions, principles. When I first started writing inventory, I didn't have many principles, and the reason is, on my inventory is because I didn't have many principles. And over time, I began to understand what principles were. And I didn't like a lot of them. And I wrote a lot of inventory on them. I love writing the second column. That's where I'm angry. And I use bullets. And I don't pull any punches. And I try and describe behavior specifically. Right? Recently, wrote some inventory. The second column gets to be very, very important in terms of your third and your fourth column. So now I'm done, and now I have a list, people, institutions, principles. Now I have my second column. And now I like to take out a legal pad, and I write the name at the top, and I write the second column, and now I'm going to write my third column. Now, the big book presents to you and I seven areas of self that are hurt, threatened, or interfered with. Those seven areas are self-esteem. That's how I see and feel about myself behind my resentment, right? Pride, that's how others see me. No one should. Ambition, it's what I wanted. It's what I wanted you to do, right? Security, what I need to be okay. Personal relations, same sex. Sex relations, opposite sex. Money, seven areas of self. This is what I've learned over time. Third column is where you're playing God. Do not write the third column from an aspect of low self-esteem because God does not have low self-esteem. You and I are writing the resentment because we got just a little bit too much. Otherwise, we wouldn't have it. Now, for periods of time, initially when I started working with inventory, when I get to my third column, I would just write the word out, like my self-esteem was affected. Or my pride, or my ambition. What finally happened was I didn't get free doing that. So there were a bunch of guys in Denver who belonged to a group called the God Squad. A guy named Big Frank. Scary guy. Biggest hand and heads on any guy human I ever met. Ex-sheep herder turned lawyer. He's dead now. He died with about 42 years of sobriety. Brilliant man. He was something else, I tell you. He did a thing called Theater of the Lie. And they really, really expanded on the third column, self-esteem. I'll give you an example how I do this. I recently wrote inventory on a guy that I'd done some work with. Column 2, and I'll paraphrase. Doesn't walk the walk. He's a liar. See? Talks the talk, but doesn't do the deal. Remember I told you we all got stage characters? So guess who's writing this inventory? The sponsor. He's making the sponsor look bad here. Right? See? I also put down there that he was a poor employee. That was in there. So I had 3, 4, 5, 6 things. Now, were those true? Yes. How am I going to make this second column into a lie? Because I have to. If I'm going to write inventory, I've got to turn that second column, what I think is the truth of the second column, and turn into it a lie. So here's the first thing I see. In order for me to write anything in the second column, in the third column, I'm God. So under self-esteem,
I'm a step worker.
Judgment.
I'm walking the walk. I'm a good employee.
Judgment. You follow me? Everything I wrote in the second. Under self-esteem, I think I'm exactly the opposite, which is the only reason I wrote it there to begin with. I didn't write this inventory because I suffer from low self-esteem. I got just a little bit too much. Pride. No one should see a sponsee of mine not doing the deal. Wow. No one should not give their employer a fair day's work. Ambition. What do I want? I want him doing the deal, walking the walk, giving me a fair day's labor, and growing balls. I did. Right? Security. What do I need to be okay? I need people I've done the work with to act like men of integrity to be okay. Whoa. I'm up against some stuff, aren't I? Right? See? Sober long time. I like this guy. Look what I'm up against here. Little inventory in the second column, right? I'm in my 26th year. Bullshit. I'm fighting for my life. This is about drinking whiskey. Right? I'm upset about whether he's walking the walk or not. Yeah, I am. You bet I am. Right? Personal relations.
Real men honor other men who've helped them.
Right? Wow. Isn't that interesting? Money. Pocketbook. I am my money. Right? Don't mess with my money. Now, that's my third column. You see how I play God? In that third column, remember last night I gave you a little visual? You all went home, sit in your little amphitheater, you're up in your little throne chair, looking at all these people in your life you're trying to arrange. If your arrangements would only stay put, if only they'd do as they wished, you'd be happy and satisfied, right? So you start to look at this. He's sitting out there. Then I move over to the fourth column. What mistakes did I make? Well, let's see. This is the third time I've hired this guy. The first two, I had to fire him too, right? Why did I do that? Because I'm too lazy to interview anyone else. I got shit to do. See, I love writing inventory. There's all kinds of stuff in there. Amazing. And what I did is, what I wrote in the third and fourth column, because everything, by the way, that I wrote in the second column that I resented was the truth. But my third and fourth column turned that into a lie, because at the end of the day, my troubles are my own making. You see how free I got? Wow, what a deal. And then I write fear inventory. I've written fear inventory a lot of different ways. My current one, I just did a two-column fear inventory, but I work with my current fears. Remember I threw out to you last night, try something. All of you, if you take the last week or two, you've had reoccurring fears go through your mind. This is not where you got 50 or 100 of them. It's the ones that keep going through your mind, the stuff that you're rubbing up against now. So column 1, what's the fear, right? Column 2, why do you have the fear? For example, who's got a fear? Give me a fear you're working with. Anybody? What is it? Okay, so what's the fear? Okay, so you're afraid because she's going to have a baby, and the reason you have it is you've never been a father before. Okay, good. Give me another one. Pardon me? Failure? Is that what someone said? Why do you have that fear?
Well, it won't feel good if you fail. It affects your image, right? Now, by the way, if you're going to write on failure, write on the other, success. One of the things I like to do with people if they've had a little time is I have them write on what I call the Big 12. Failure, success, acceptance, rejection, sobriety, drinking, God, agnosticism, living and dying. Let's see, what's the last one? I mentioned acceptance, rejection. I came up with those because I've listened to so many inventory and written so many. Those 12 cover the bulk of most fears. That was the other one. Everyone has this big fear of abandonment, right? Well, I'm gonna see if I can help you with this fear. The reason you have it is because it will happen. It's supposed to happen. You and I live in a world of impermanence. It started the minute I was born. I've been abandoned ever since by everything that meant anything to me. That's why I turned to God. Wow. And I live in that. And I take that into an ever-changing life situation in which everything that I think is going to give me some sense of satisfaction will abandon me and will leave me. But being connected to God, that oneness, that never leaves me. And all is well. And it's all on loan. And it's impossible for me to be abandoned anymore. See? It wasn't mine to begin with. Mine. My car, my AA group. Anytime you use that word, you're going to be writing some inventory. My wife. Watch. Pay attention to your language, ladies and gentlemen. My job. My home. Mine. It's where all your inventory comes from. It's where all your fear. You think that shit, you own it. You think it defines you. You have attachments to it. So you walk around afraid all the time. Mine. See, it's a paradox. When my life was simple, living in a one-bedroom apartment, no big deal, right? Now I've got $3 million worth of property that the company I started sits on. Do you think there's more fear associated with that by chance? See, that's not right. See, I was taught you get more, right? Actually, there's not more fear associated with that. There would have been at one time. But there's not. We're the world like a loose garment. Move in, move out. It's all on loan. See? No attachments. Present moment. God. Rid of self. Love things as they are. Stay present. Right? It's all on loan. Mine, it doesn't exist. See? Nothing belongs to us. It's all on loan. You don't breathe on your own power. You do nothing on your own power. There's only the illusion of separateness. I love the people who talk about, I have control issues. No, you don't. You have illusion issues. There's no such thing as control. I mean, go down to breath. Did any of you control your breathing today? No. The most non-recognized essential element in your life, and most of you went through the whole day and didn't think of it one time. Your breath. Am I right? Sure. See, you guys are afraid to answer anything now, aren't you? Not raising my hand. I don't care what he says. Right? Waking up. It's a call to wake up. Steps are a call to wake up. Have fun with yourself. Have fun with your life. God, quit taking yourself so serious. Ooh. Have fun. Tell the men I work with. Craig, we laugh all the time. Me and my pal, we laugh all the time at ourselves. Get interested in your true self. You are amazing. See, I am funny. It's just insane, you know. Today we're laughing because I said, what'd you do? And I said, well, actually, I think I napped all day. I haven't done that like I was junior in high school or something. And I did. Got up at 6:30 and did my disciplines, had something to eat, went back to bed. Next thing I knew, it was 4 o'clock in the afternoon, right? Well, in one of those moments, when I went out, drink of water or whatever, well, Craig came in, he's talking to me. Well, unbeknownst to him,
because he falls asleep sometime. I'd gone back in, closed the door. He's still talking. 5, 10, 15 minutes. Doesn't realize I'm completely gone, right? See? Then by the time he wakes up to it, because I know how he is, I guarantee you he looked to see if the neighbor by chance saw him talking to himself. See, how do you not laugh at that kind of stuff, right? You know? We do, but we have fun, see? Watching Brad get all twisted up, right? He and I were talking today, you know, you get your sense of self outside yourself, right? So he wants to make sure all these people that came in from out of town, of which there's vast numbers, have an amazing time so he can be liked and loved. Then he resents you all for doing all the shit he's got to do for you. How do you not laugh at that? You know what I'm saying? I tell you, that's why we have our own tribe. Just, you know, we don't mix well with those others, see? See, we understand that, you know? Oh. But all this stuff comes. Write the inventories. Write the fear inventories. Sex inventory. It's about relationships, not just about sexual energy. You write those three inventories, and you turn around and you do a fifth step. I want to close tonight reading the fifth step promises. And because to me, they're some of the most powerful in the whole book. And they're on page 75. And you get done reading these three inventories to someone. It says, we pocket our pride, we go to it, we illuminate every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we've taken this step, withholding nothing, then here are my fifth step promises. It says, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we're on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. Don't get any better than that. God bless you. See you Monday.